Let's call the Atascadero Planning Commission meeting of August 4th to order, please. Commissioner Schmidt, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Most definitely. Will everyone rise and please say the flag salute with me?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic.
All present.
Can we have a motion to approve
the agenda? Move approval of the agenda.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Benz, second by Vice Chair Moreno. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I'll abstain because I sat down at the last meeting or two meetings ago.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-1-1.
601.
601.
No, it's 702.
That's right, it is.
The next item on the agenda is public comment, and this is the portion of the meeting that's reserved for anyone in the public wishing to address the commission on any item that would fall under its jurisdiction, but which is not on the agenda tonight. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Anyone interested? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission. Any planning commission business? Next item is the consent calendar.
Move approval of the two items under the consent calendar.
Second.
Commissioner Benz, a move to approve the consent calendar. Commissioner Sturdivant was a second. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
The next item on the agenda is a tree removal permit. And I believe, Callie, will you be doing the presentation? Thank you. At your convenience.
The tree removal permit that we're looking at tonight is going to be at the Atascadero Zoo. It's at 9305 Pismo Avenue. It's a request to remove two valley oaks and two black walnuts. And the total inches on this is 76 inches in diameter. And these are being asked to be proposed to be removed. So this is a whole new bump out in front of the zoo. One of the other trees to be removed is located right here in this new entry structure. And then there's one back here in the existing pond area, and that exhibit is proposed to be redone in the future, so that's kind of the next phase. But currently, we're looking at doing the bathrooms first. This is a location for a new bathroom, a new entry building, and the new arbor entrance. These are the existing trees. Here we have a 30-inch valley oak and a 4-inch black walnut in front of the existing entry. This is the 8-inch valley oak in the front exhibit, and this is the 34-inch black walnut. And both of these trees are in poor health currently. The city will be required to put mitigation funds into the native tree mitigation fund. It's fees of either $2,533, or the city can replant 51 native trees on site. So there's also an option to do a combination of fees and replanting. And there are findings that the Planning Commission needs to make in order to approve a tree removal. Those are in your staff report. And tonight, staff is recommending approval of the tree removal, as shown in your staff report. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions of staff?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I was a little bit confused when I was reading the staff report, and It read, when you talked about findings on page 9, it says, in considering any tree removal request, at least one of the required findings must be made, and then you list the items below. And it appeared that one of the findings was A, B, C, D, or E, but when I looked at the ordinance, I realized and found that one of the findings is the tree is obstructing proposed improvements, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4 other findings that can be chosen from. So I was a little bit concerned about that, in that in the finding that we are being used, it talks about early consultation with the city, and then it talks about practical design alternatives. I was kind of hoping to see that there was at least a discussion about the alternatives to the project, and I'm wondering if there were any. And I'm looking at this as, you know, there's a lot of discussion about transparency, and I'm sure that
the Public Works, who is processing the permits for the zoo, is in the audience, so he may be able to give a little bit more information about that. But what we do on the findings is, you're right, there are several findings listed in the ordinance, and staff pulls one of those findings out that applies to the project. So in this case, it was the one that the tree is obstructing proposed improvements.
Okay. So with respect to the other subcategories that are under the finding that we're expected to use tonight about provision of cost comparisons and so on, I would hopefully that stuff was done, and so it just in a matter of fairness for other people who have to deal with this issue. And then also I was kind of wanting to see what the master plan was, and I was glad to see the elevation drawings that you had provided at the very beginning, kind of conceptual things. And when I looked at the site plans that were provided, it shows that the area where the waterfall and the tiger are located is going to be a future flamingo area. And I'm wondering why the trees have to be removed within that flamingo area. Is it because of the leaves or because of shading or whatever?
One of the trees is actually located right here where the new entry structure is going. So that one's proposed to be removed for the structure. The other one is the smaller 8-inch tree located in the flamingo exhibit. And part of this is that with the zoo, they're trying to do more plants that are for the native habitats, like the animals. So in this case, the oak tree doesn't necessarily go with the flamingos. I think that's part of it. And then just to, you know, be able to do a full exhibit for the flamingos.
So oak trees are native to us, but not to the flamingos, huh?
Yeah, part of the zoo master plan is actually to do these different zones throughout the whole zoo, so that there's, depending on the animals, also do plants in that same just to kind of that same location of the world, and try to pull plants in and the architecture of the exhibit, things like that, to make it a little bit more specific to each part of the world.
I could see the need for the ones in the front when I went to the site and I looked at where they were and how they are affected by the design. That made sense. I guess my last question is, I'm wondering if there is going to be some type of demo plan for the wood trellising that's going to be ripped out, and whether that wood trellising is going to be maybe reused by the city or donated to someone or something, because it's nice material, and I just hate to see it be tossed away.
I think that
offhand is
alternatives.
That was your first question, and what was your last one you mentioned?
Whether there would be a demo plan for the material that's going to be torn out?
Yes, thank you. The material that's being torn out will probably be recycled, chipped up and ground up and put into some recycled product. The wood itself is redwood. It's fairly old, and it really has really no use for the city. The steel structure itself will be reused, and as you can see on this diagram up here where it says Public Zoo, it's holding a few banners. The tall pieces will be recycled there. The shorter pieces will be recycled along the new gift shop area and entry gate itself, and the entire area there will be a shade structure. So right now it's open to sunlight, and that'll be shaded to give the patrons a little more, I guess, comfort in the summertime. And then you had a question, I think, why so many trees are being taken out. In the yellow area shown on the screen, apologize, I don't have a laser pointer, there is a tree that's under that shade structure itself. It's like a cloth type shade structure there at the lower corner next to the dark green and the yellow.
And then that is in the flamingo area, as was explained, is because of
that'd be right.
Not being native?
Well, you know, these trees, the zoo has a plan. Thank you. The zoo has a plan to create 6 eco zones that are like eco hotspots in the world. So as the zoo rebuilds or retools for those eco hotspots, the trees and fauna and flora from those areas will be imported, and that will be designed into those exhibits. Now, I'm not here tonight to say that every oak tree is going to be cut down in the zoo, because that's not really the point. The trees that are coming out here in this area are black oak and are, from what I understand, not doing well in this zoo area. The big, I think, oak in this area right here will stay. We're not proposing to do anything with that. And as a matter of fact, right now, that's the demo out to the accessible parking spaces at the front of the zoo. The entry building and ticket booth kiosk is part of the an ad alternate, meaning if we have enough money, we may award that bid. But we're not planning on doing that work. We needed to apply for the tree removals in this area here, and along there's an existing wall. This is the proposed structure. The existing wall here, in case that ad alternate comes through, and we can build that, the gift shop in this location, and then the entry booth in offices there.
Thank you. And so it's anticipated with that alternative that you're talking about that the trees will remain until that alternative or that that remodeling of the entrances will happen? Or will it be taken out up front because we have the permit and we're going to use it?
Well, I believe the diseased trees, the trees that are in bad shape, will be taken out by the zoo staff. But you're correct, the other oaks and others may stay. I can't guarantee that. That would be up to the zoo if they want to take those trees out or not. But they could stay.
It would seem, again, the reason for taking out the trees is because proposed development is obstructed by them. But if the proposed development doesn't occur, then why take out the trees? Beyond them being in an unsafe situation or a hazard or a nuisance or that type of a thing.
If you want to save the trees, you know, if we don't construct the project, I don't believe we're going to take them out. We're going to pay to take them out if we don't need to take them out. So if the commission would like to place a condition that the trees do not get removed unless the construction happens, I have no problem with that.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions of Mr. Athey? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to weigh in?
Is that it? Okay. Steven Alvarez, 15. Now, in the very near future, it's going to start cracking that wall, and it's going to cost the city a lot more money than it is to take that tree down right now. Tree number 5, the other valley oak, is a very structurally weak young tree right now. At about a 18-foot level, it has an acute crotch angle, and will be very seriously hazardous in the future, so it's better taken out right now. Tree 4 is a nice young black walnut, and could stay there for a while. In years to come, say 5 to 10 years, it will start impacting the pavement in the front if the program doesn't go forward. Tree 7 that's being slated for removal is a very old black walnut tree that has a lot of decay. It's up against the ticket booth. It would probably be on a scale from 1 to 12 that we rate these hazardous trees, a 12, and it should be removed as soon as possible.
On trees 5 and 4, again, that's in front of where the new ticket area are, they seem to be pretty close to the building when I was there looking at them. Is there any hazard of them getting into the foundation at all or doing any damage that way?
Not immediately, but in, say, the near future, 5 to 10 years, they will start tearing up pavement pretty seriously.
Okay. I appreciate your explanations. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else wishing to speak? We'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission.
I have a question.
Okay. Commissioner Benz?
Yeah, this is a question for staff. The tree mitigation measure is $2,533.33 or 51 5-gallon trees. If you put 51 5-gallon trees there, you probably wouldn't be able to build that. What you want to do, right? So is that really an alternative, or is that?
This one's kind of unique because we, the zoo is actually on the same property as the baseball field next door. Then they have the whole parking lot and quite a bit of land around there. So there is a lot of space if they want to replant. The only condition by our ordinance is that it be on site, and the site is very large. So Public Works can kind of see what's feasible and propose parking lot trees as they feel are necessary, or they can pay the fees.
So staff has a normal process, whether it's the city that's trees totaling 76 inches DBH.
Okay, I'll second it.
Any discussion? A motion made by Commissioner Benz, seconded by Commissioner Ward. Could I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I'd like to say that when I first read the staff report, I first read the finding that was needed to be made. I thought that the facts and the evidence was weak in terms of making that finding. But with the explanations that were made by the city and the arborist, I feel much more secure, and so I can vote yes.
Okay. Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is a presentation by staff relative to solar power financing program.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've put this on the commission's agenda at the request of the commission. I think at one of the previous meetings, the commission asked for a briefing on this issue. This is something that the planning department staff has been working on for the last couple months, and we have been to the city council with a briefing report as well, and we have some direction from the council. Callie Taylor is doing a lot of the legwork and heavy lifting on this, so I'm going to turn it over to her, and she'll make the presentation. Then we both are available to try to answer any of your questions.
So AB 811, we're referring to this a lot as the Clean Energy Financing Program. And this is really just some information about the program for the Planning Commission. There, we have seen, to give you a little bit of background, a national push for renewable energy. It's coming from the state and from the national government. Renewable energy has been a really positive way to, you know, save energy because what we find here is Atascadero is actually a really good location for solar. We're in one of the hotter climates in the country, so it is well-suited for our environment. Residential solar systems are cost-effective, and AB 811 is a new bill that allows cities to assist in the financing energy once they have the solar systems installed. The program will use municipal bonds through an assessment district, and those bonds would be repaid over 20-year time. So basically, a property owner would pay the bonds back as part of their property tax. And it is a voluntary program, so property owners can choose to take part if they wish. So this kind of gives you an idea of how the process would work if the city moves forward with this. First, what the city does is they create a land-secured financing district, and this is typically an assessment district or a community facilities district. These are like things that we see a lot on planned developments. Property owners would voluntarily sign up for the financing to install the energy projects, and then they would become part of that assessment district. They would be given the funds to go ahead and do the energy upgrades, whether it's solar or retrofitting. And then they would repay the bonds typically over a 20-year period through their taxes. So we typically see solar systems maybe coming in around $32,000 for a 3.5 kilowatt system. And with all of the federal tax rebates and other things that you can get right now, that cost would be significantly lowered. There would be a small administration fee up front for the property owners who choose to take part of a program, maybe around $550. With an interest rate of 6.75 and a 20-year tax, the property owners could be looking to pay around $210 a month for the tax. And these numbers will all vary depending on the interest rate, the cost of the system, and the rebates and a number of other things. So these are some of the benefits for the property owners. The main thing is that AB 811 reduces the upfront costs. A lot of times right now, property owners that want to install solar can't afford the upfront costs. They don't have this large chunk of money to put down. So if they're able to finance it over a 20-year period, their monthly costs actually wind up being pretty close to what they actually pay on their electricity bill. So that works out, you know, good for them in the short term. And then the property tax payments would also be transferred if the property is sold. And this is a concern for a lot of property owners. A lot of times they don't want to make the initial investment because they think, what if the property is sold in 5 or 10 years? They wouldn't be able to. The program costs would be paid out of the bond proceeds. So we really are looking for a program that doesn't cost the city very much to operate. That's one of our main goals as part of this. It would help stimulate the local economy, and it would also help promote new green jobs in Atascadero. So what we did was our staff took this to the City Council on May 26th, and the City Council adopted a resolution to create a clean energy program and a funding district that's consistent with AB 811. So our staff sent out an RFP, and we are looking for a consultant to do three things. Those include develop the program, so it's the clean energy program, set up the funding district with the funding source, so basically find a source for the bonds. And then the third thing would be to provide ongoing administration for the program so that it's not doesn't just rely on city staff to continue funding the program. These proposals are currently being reviewed. They were due last week. So our committee will take a look at those, and then the consultant will be chosen by City Council. And that concludes our presentation, and we're here for questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Benz?
Yes. On the first, on page 31 of your report, it's under discussion in the third paragraph. It says AB 811 is a financing mechanism that allows the cost of installing solar power on single family residential dwellings. But in your request for proposal, you guys are outlining that you're going to add in commercial also. I was just wondering if anyone has found out whether or not AB 811 allows for the commercial, since the report says it was designed for residential.
We know it works really well for single-family residential. Mm-hmm. We have heard that it also will work for commercial projects, and that's why we put that in the RFP. Staff-wise, we're not an expert on this program. It's fairly new, and it's developing as, you know, by the day. But there was a couple consultants out there that are very knowledgeable in the legislation and creative in the options, and that's really what we're trying to tease out with the RFP, was consultants that could come in and figure out how to give us the broadest program as possible. And that was specifically one of the items that the City Council requested staff look into, was the ability to include commercial and multifamily in the program as well. So we're
sense of how many residents that this would actually make any sort of financial sense for. I went back and looked at our electricity bills for all of this year and last year. This year we've averaged $38 a month. Last year we averaged $40 a month. So, you know, $210, there's certainly some disparity there. So, you know, obviously people have pools and things like that and have high electric bills. But what percentage is this? You know, do you see that this is really going to make any sort of an impact, or is this a lot of work being done for this much in the end? Unless something like commercial, multifamily, that could get on board and make a real impact.
Well, what we've heard from the consultants and what we've seen from other communities is you need at least 100 participants really to spread the cost of issuing the bonds. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Whether it makes sense for an individual property owner to participate is going to be highly variable based on your family needs and equipment and things like that. I think in your case, you know, if you already have a $30 or $40 electric bill, then paying $200 for a system per month doesn't make sense. Part of what we're asking the consultant to do early on is to conduct an education and feasibility study. We want to make sure that the community understands the trade-offs and the benefits, and you know, we reach out to the people that the program makes sense for, and those that it doesn't make sense for, they have the information to understand why it may not make sense for them. And then to do a feasibility study so that of those that it makes sense for, get a good sense of how many really are realistically likely to participate, so that we don't end up going through the process and then get to the end and realize we really don't have enough participants to spread the cost of the bonds. But that is, you know, the first part of what the consultant would be tasked with doing, is getting that education and communication lines opened up with the public so that the people that would benefit are the people that are would be encouraged to participate.
And so then in the beginning, the city would have out-of-pocket costs of simply the consultant and the feasibility study. And if at that point you say, okay, this isn't feasible, then the city would be sort of on the hook for those costs, and you just write it off. And
well, that's one of the things we're going to be looking into. The way this program is set up is we're looking for the consultant to figure out a way to fund these studies and the outreach as part of their program. What we've heard and what we've seen in other communities is these consultants have these setups, so they're self. I've just reviewed cursorily a couple of the proposals, and they've addressed that issue to a certain degree, that they think, you know, the maximum exposure of the city would be a certain amount of money, and that's the kind of thing we're going to want to pin down before we award a contract.
Okay. Just with, you know, budget and the state coming and taking there, all of that, all of us, I know, are concerned. So, okay, so you right now you don't have an idea of what that sort of maximum exposure is right now?
Don't yet. We're still just literally the proposals came in Friday, so we're still early in the review.
Okay. And is there a deadline as to when you're going to, I think that was in here, but I don't recall right now, a deadline as to when you're going to choose a consultant?
We have got it scheduled right now for the council to award a contract in September, probably their second meeting in September, which gives us a couple weeks to do interviews and make a recommendation to the council.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I would just like to follow up on what Commissioner Bentz was addressing about the application to commercial properties. And also this picks up on what Vice Chair Moreno was saying too, that we really need to expand this thing as much as possible. In other words, take it to the limit of the legislation. If commercial properties are permitted to participate under the legislation, let's get them in. And likewise, multifamily properties. I know, for example, some owners of an apartment complex in Atascadero who are very anxious to find out if they can participate in this program. Now, also, I want to raise the question of energy-efficient retrofits that you mentioned. Can one participate in the program solely for the purpose of having an energy-efficient retrofit of their property? Or can they only get the energy-efficient retrofit brought in under the program if they get a solar system put in?
I don't know if we exactly know it. I think that you can just do the energy efficiency retrofits because it's not actually a solar program. We talk about solar because that's most likely, but it's actually a clean energy generation program. So theoretically, I guess it could be a wind system. So I think as long as the net result is a reduction in energy use or the generation of clean energy, then it would qualify.
In the retrofit side of this program, who might not think that the economics warrant participation in the solar side of it?
Okay. Commissioner Ward?
Yes. I have some serious reservations of this. When I first learned of this program, I was somewhat guardedly enthusiastic about it, but as I dug into it, I put on my engineer's hat, and someone has been involved with the alternative energy market for 35 years. I have seen program after program, scheme after scheme come down the track. They all look very attractive. In my view, this is one of the better looking ones. But here's my concern. A 20-year guarantee. Who's going to guarantee this? I know of very few people in this business that have been in business or will be in business 20 years from now. So I see the city being hooked on this. There's nothing in here about maintenance. I find it very difficult to believe that you can put a very complicated electronic system on your roof with the kind of weather, ultraviolet radiation, wind, squirrels running, chipmunks, what have you, and think that for 20 years you're going to have no problems. Well, I think it's very naive. And again, I think somebody's going to call the city and say, hey, you got me into this, now you fix it. But the overriding thing is that this type of technology is changing so quickly that within the next 5 years, there's going to be solar cells that are going to be so much more efficient than this. They're going to cost less. 10 years out, who knows if even solar cells will be used. There'll probably be fuel cell technology. And some poor homeowner is stuck with $2,500 a year on their property tax, and that's a big hit. And they're going to come back roaring mad at the city because they're going to say, you sold me a bill of goods and I didn't understand it. So, yes, I have some deep concerns. And when you add up the total cost of this to the individual homeowner and you crank it, listening 5-10 years out, and you've got a lot of unhappy people, and I don't know how many people in this city have energy bills over $200 a month. I think PG&E could push a button and let us know and very quickly. So I have some very serious reservations about this. And if it were my decision, I would say the city should stay out of this.
Okay. Anyone else? Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, thank you. And ditto to that. That was perfect. What is ICLEI?
ICLEI is the International Council of Governments. It's a thing. It's an organization that the council agreed to sign up as with part of our greenhouse gas emissions. Currently, the Air Pollution Control District is doing an inventory of all of our greenhouse gas emissions, and ICLEI is the. It's kind of like an organization that has a program.
We don't know what the letters represent. Then the acronym.
It used to stand for. It was something different, but they changed it. Now it's International Council of Governments.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in how the program would stimulate the local economy. Are the installation of whatever program it is, going to be limited to contractors who have business licenses in Atascadero or to businesses that sell products within the city? Or will they have, like, first right of refusal or something?
We've asked the consultant to structure the program so we include as many local contractors and businesses that are involved in the solar industry as possible. At the same time, we can't exclude any group. All contractors that do work with building permits are required to have a business license. So if you're an out-of-town contractor, you apply for a business license when you pick up your building permit. So they all end up with a local business license at some point. We don't know exactly how that's going to work in terms of setting the program up to encourage the local businesses, although we do have some fairly active local solar providers, and they've been very interested in the program, and they feel that they're going to be in a good position to compete with out-of-town contractors as well. So from what we've heard of the local contractors, they're very supportive of this, and they feel good about this program.
Will there be something set up, I know, when the consultant sets up the program, or if they do, that will be a preferred list of contractors or something for people in the city? Or since the program is voluntary, it'll be just those who volunteer into the program?
It's only specific to those volunteering, so it only ends up being an assessment on those parcels where somebody has agreed to join. So on a block, you could have one house that's in, the next house isn't in, and the next house next to it would be in the assessment district. So it only affects those that choose to participate.
So volunteering is essentially voting to join the district then?
Yeah, it'll actually be subject to a Proposition 218 voting protocol. So those that join will then have to vote to form the district that we're talking about.
So then, I mean, it's going to be one at a time. I'm the first person, so I vote, and therefore I win. And then the next time there's two of us, and then I vote again, and the next person votes, and we split 50-50, so it doesn't go through. I mean,
now it'll all be balloted at once. So let's say, for example, we have 200 interested participants. As we're going through the formation process, we will ballot all 200 at the same time, and then the city clerk will determine whether or not the formation actually carried so that we could then issue the bonds for that district.
I'm very concerned about the administration over the long term. In the selection process of the consultant, is it anticipated that that person, that group, is also going to be the administrator? And if so, are they going to include within the budget items that they have within within that process how much we are going to get paid to administer the project, 4%, 5%? Will there be any considerations for cost of living increases over a 20-year period of time? I'm concerned. To me, I look at it as a commodity. I could sell it to someone else to administer, have them do it versus me. So there's a lot of questions I have about the administration of it, and hopefully as we work our way through this process, if we do get to that point, to consider that very closely. Because, again, it's we're talking a 20-year time life minimum. I don't know.
We're definitely going to be looking at that. Our finance department's very sensitive to the long-term administration overhead costs associated with this. Right now we're running a number of assessment districts for road maintenance and landscaping, so we've got a lot of real-world experience with what the administration realities are with some of these assessment districts. So they are part.
Coastal School District was looking at retrofitting or providing solar panels to their school district, where actually they don't own the system. Someone else owns the system and maintains it and repairs it for a 20-year period of time. The people who do that investment get their financial return is the kickback in which the school district gets from the state. So that's how they made their money. I don't know if that's possible. And then lastly, I'd like to say, from my reading of AB 811, I think it applies to any energy efficiency, whether it be turbines or cisterns or whatever it can be. I mean, if someone wanted to propose hay bale housing or hay bale construction, I think that they could probably make it stretch to work that far. It's not limited to solar. There's no question about that.
Commissioner Sturdivant, any questions? Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I understood that we were looking at this for informational purposes, but since Commissioner Ward took it upon himself to offer his political viewpoint on this subject, I think it's only appropriate to, for the sake of balance, to present a different viewpoint. I don't consider mine political. I've had experience as an attorney for many years, and some of the matters that Commissioner Ward was offering his warnings about relate to legal matters, and I don't share his anxieties on these points. He raised the point about security, first of all. This will be entirely secured, the amounts that are put out there. The obligation goes on to the property tax bill. The city is entitled to collect that property tax, or the state, county, whatever. It goes with the land. If the property is sold, the obligation goes with it. That's about as secure as you can get. Most lenders dream, they fantasize about that level of security. They can't get it. Anyway, that would apply here. The question he raised about the need to repair the product, I don't understand what that really has to do with this. Certainly, anything that anyone buys is subject to the need for maintenance. That's a fact of life. I think it's demeaning to the citizens of Atascadero to suggest that they wouldn't go into this realizing that that's... Now, what was the other thing? That people are going to come back complaining because the technology changed. Well, I think it's disparaging to suggest that the adult population of Atascadero is not prepared to realize that it's their risk. If they buy this, technology changes. If they buy a car today, it could be in 2 years that there's going to be a very different automotive technology that's dominant. We all are big boys and girls and know that this is a risk we take. And I think anyone who buys one of these systems knows it too. But in any event, the city's attorneys should, and I expect will, be careful to make sure that there are appropriate disclaimers and notices, warnings, whatever it takes, to make sure that anyone who buys a system knows that they're not buying it from the city, that their remedies lie against the sellers, that the technology can change. I mean, these things can all be disclaimed against if it's really necessary to do so. And again, I think that it's
can
not.
Can we bring this to a close?
It's funny. I didn't notice you hastening, Commissioner Ward, to
but
finish.
Now we're getting into an argument between two commissioners and their positions, and I don't think it's appropriate since the city council has already voted to go down this road, and staff is here to inform us of what has been going on and what their plans are, and they're looking for any suggestions that we might have, which I have heard many constructive comments tonight. So I would appreciate it if we could get out of the competition between two commissioners there.
All right. Well, let me – you could have said that at the beginning, but let me just wrap it up by saying that I think this is a very good program. Is it perfect? I don't know of perfection in this world, but I think it's about as good as we can hope for. And I commend the staff for going forward with this, and I commend the City Council for supporting it and moving ahead with it. I think it'll be good for the community. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward, do you have something new to add to this other than a rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Technology speaks for itself on this. This isn't politics. And this is not buying a car. You're locked in for 20 years. You're just absolutely locked in. And I think this is something that has to be addressed with this program. And there's got to be, as Commissioner Colomarino said, there's got to be, full disclosure on this. And I think the one part of this program that needs to be emphasized is the retrofit of homes for heating, air conditioning systems, double pane windows, insulation. Those things work, and they're proven. And I don't think they need subsidies, but this is a marvelous financing mechanism for those things. I'm concerned that this is tied to renewable energy and that that can't be a standalone thing. But if that could be a standalone program, I think it would just be a wonderful program in this city.
Thank you. Commissioner Benz?
Yes. Just a couple more items. I've been looking at some solar power alternatives from private enterprise, and BP Solar has been in business for 35 years, has a 25-year warranty on whatever they install. So there's plenty, I'm sure there's plenty of companies out there that have the backing and the ability to provide warranties that'll help solve some of the problems that may keep people from wanting to finance. But the other thing I'm worried about is the state bond rating and the state's credit. When we issue these bonds, our credit is going to be impacted by the state's credit, because the state, right now, the state is taking $1.7 billion from redevelopment agencies throughout the state of California. That, for the city of Atascadero, is $1,334,046 for the year 2009-2010. They're going to take another $350 million, or billion dollars, not billion, $350 million from the redevelopment agency in 2010-2011. In addition to that, the state is taking $1.9 billion of Prop 1A money from cities throughout the state of California during this current fiscal year. So with those kinds of problems coming on and us having to balance the state budget, I don't think we're going to get very good bond rating on sale of bonds. So we should be picking our time and place to enter the bond market based on our own credit rating and whether or not the state's fiscal problems are going to be solved or become worse. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes. One more thing I wanted to ask about was property tax increases. Is it anticipated that when people apply for a permit to put these improvements onto their homes, the tax assessor is going to get another shot at the property and increase property tax values at that point? And one of the things that I'm also very concerned about is, you know, there's going to be this fixed amount that's going to be added to your annual property tax bill. And heaven forbid if we go through a situation like we've been right now where there's foreclosures and so on and the value of the property goes down, but we have this fixed amount that's going to stick there because it's not going to, I don't think it's going to decrease proportionately with the property taxes. And I wonder how people who would be looking at purchasing a home that's been foreclosed on and then seeing this lump there and having to assume that, and it might not be to their benefit. But anyway, on property taxes, are we anticipating that people who involve themselves in the program will have an increase in property taxes?
Yes, they will. That's standard. Actually, all building permits that are issued are reported to the county tax assessor, so they do reassessments on most new construction, but they don't reassess your whole property. So if you add a solar system, they don't go and reassess your whole house. They just assess the value of whatever you added. So if you added a $30,000 system, they would add the assessment there, but they wouldn't reassess your whole the rest of your property. It would still be under the Prop 13 protections.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I just wanted to address what Commissioner Benz was bringing up about the bond rating. Now, I'm not certain about this, but my impression is that this borrowing would not be would not really affect the city's bond rating because it wouldn't be against the city's general credit. It would be fully secured as an assessment district. The obligation goes with the property, sort of like a sewer district or something like that. And so lenders looking at this, I think, are inclined to say, well, you know, we're not depending on the city's general credit for this. This is as secure as we can find. It goes with the property. It's part of the property tax. It goes with the property. It looks pretty good. Now, I'm not sure about that, but that's my impression.
That's correct.
So then it shouldn't negatively impact the city's credit rating if it lives up to that theory.
No, it will impact the city's credit rating because the city is losing a lot of money due to state takeaways. And if our ability to provide services are jeopardized by them taking these large sums of money, then how are we going to be able to provide our normal service levels, let alone an extra service level for providing the county with a list every year of how much each parcel is being taxed for their improvement. And by the way, that $30,000 would result in $300 a year in property taxes additional. That's all. It's not a big number. But I do think that the overall credit standing of the state and the city is going to suffer as a result of the actions that the state has taken, regardless of whether it's an assessment district financing, which has it's not a general obligation bond. It is a debt that is secured by property. But if the housing industry doesn't recover, then you're going to see that kind of debt isn't going to be viewed favorably by investors.
Okay, we're getting beyond, I think, the scope. I'd like to make a few comments here. I'd like to thank Director Frace and Callie for bringing this to us and allowing us the opportunity to discuss it. I have a couple of questions. One, is there any estimate relative to what percentage of the overall bond cost would be directly related to the consultant's fees over a 20-year period?
We don't have that right now, but we will have that when we award to the contract at the council level, that'll clearly be part of what we disclose to council is what percentage of the bonds are basically paying for the consultant services.
And then one other question that I've got would be, how would people that would choose to participate in the program be impacted when they go to seek financing for this or when they make the application? I mean, is it going to be the standard credit type of things, or is there going to be special credit requirements that the people would have to meet?
I don't know that answer in detail, but I believe that's one of the appealing factors of this program, is that you don't have to go through your standard credit application process because it's a municipal bond. It's tied to the property. We know the value of the property more or less. So I imagine that that's not going to be a very onerous process.
Okay. Good point. With that, I don't have any more questions, and I thank you very much for your report.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have no public hearings tonight. That takes us to commissioner comments and reports. And could I have one meeting, please, commissioners? Commissioner comments and reports. Does anyone have any comments or report? Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes. When I first came on to the commission, I asked about the oak trees that are along Traffic Way that were associated with the river project over there, and had noted that there were several trees that had died along the way. Since that time, I've noted that those dead trees have been removed, which is I'm happy about. But I'm wondering if there was a tree monitoring program or some type of program for that project to replace those trees. And if there wasn't or there isn't, could the city maybe participate some trees to that area? There is irrigation that's along that parkway right now.
That was a problem project, to put it lightly. The project was broken into phases, and that last phase, which included Traffic Way, was never completed by the developer. We actually had to pull bonds to finish that work. So the city and another contractor ended up having to finish the work, and that contractor put in the trees. There was problems with the irrigation system. Although you can see the system laying on the ground, it is no longer operational. Yeah. It never was really installed correctly. Because the developer had failed to complete the project, we didn't have our standard maintenance bonds and maintenance periods that we usually have for the establishment of landscaping and that sort of thing. So for all those reasons, we didn't get the landscape established the way we would normally on a project. At this point, we don't have anybody like a developer to go after to make sure the trees go back in. Right now, it's a city road. Those are all city responsibilities. Public Works isn't in the position right now to fix the irrigation system or to install more trees. Although in the future, possibly as native tree mitigation, that park site as well as that parkway is one of those that we're kind of keeping an eye on that may make sense to do some plantings. So we don't have any short-term plans to replace those trees. Over the long term, it may be a site that we could use as a native tree replanting, and that might be the best way to get those trees finished off there.
Was that a mitigation program?
The
planting?
Yeah, the fees that we talked about collecting on our tree removal tonight, those go into an account that's earmarked for replanting and replanting programs. So the Planning Department, along with the Parks Maintenance Department, we do have a program where we've planted over 1,000 trees in the last couple years in some of the public areas along the Salinas River, as well as Atascadero Creek and Paloma Park. So we have a program. We plant trees annually, and that may be a site in the future that we might look at as a replanting site.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting at is there a violation of a CEQA permit out there. And with respect to trees and irrigation, I don't know if the city has spoke with Bert Wilson at Las Palitas. He has an excellent planting program for native trees that doesn't rely on irrigation. And it's the way he has a program that's designed that deals with mulch, and it's very, very successful. My next kind of complaint right now are these things. And I've been walking around lately, and these have been at my post office box for at least 3 months. And as I walk along the road, they are all over the city. And I'm wondering if there's anything the city can do when people throw phone books on the road and just leave them there because no one picks them up. Are they soliciting in any way in which they could be required to pick up their trash?
Don't know the answer to that, but that's something I can talk to code enforcement about and get a little bit more information. What's the name on that book?
This is the North County Access Yellow Pages, and down Santa Rosa, I'll bet you there's about 50 of them laying on the side of the road.
Okay. I'll do some research on that.
Any other comments or reports? Commissioner, Vice Chair Moreno?
You'll get it one of these days, right?
I got it. I just keep wanting to keep you on your toes.
Thank you. Director Frace, a quick question. At our previous meeting, we were told that the video wasn't going to be taking place when we had smaller meetings and things like that. And tonight was quite a small meeting, and I'm wondering, has that policy reversed? Is there a reason tonight was being recorded? Curious as to what the policy is now.
The policy hasn't changed. The staff believe, because of the discussion of the AB 811, that there might be some useful information to the public, so we felt that it made sense to broadcast this meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
I think we demonstrated that there was, because I had a similar question. The only comment I've got, and Director Frase, you can include it in your director's report, is a status report on Colony Square.
Okay.
Thank you.
So moving on to the director's report, your next meeting is in 2 weeks. It's on August 18th. We've got two fairly significant items scheduled right now. The first is the draft housing element. So the consultant has been working all summer on that. We have a draft that will be ready for you at that meeting. It's pretty big, so get ready for some reading. Lots of numbers, so I'm sure Heather will like that. So we've got that on the agenda. We also have a kind of minor zoning code cleanup text amendment that we're proposing as well. There's a couple sections of the code that we just know have some inconsistencies that have come up fairly recently. So we want to bring that through and do some cleanup on a couple different code sections. Nothing big and earth-shaking, but it's stuff that just needs to be clarified. So those will both be on your next agenda. Then in terms of the Colony Square project, as we talked about, I think, last meeting, we have a new operator. Galaxy Theaters is now going to be the operator. Right now, Galaxy, along with the developer, Mr. Harrison and Peter Helf, are in the process of working out their agreements, and we're trying to get all the details put together on the financing as well as the community development agency's participation. So the attorneys and the bankers are all working quite diligently on it. We don't have, you know, a start date to report at this point, but all the parties are working and everything's going in the right direction.
Very good. Thank you. Vice Chair Moreno?
Is the housing element, is that another joint meeting or Planning Commission specific?
That'll be Planning Commission specific. You'll be making a recommendation to the City Council.
Got it.
Commissioner Colomarino?
I just wanted to ask about the old City Hall. There was supposed to be work starting, I think, this summer. Anything new on that?
Yes. The plans came in, I think, Monday for it from the architect. So the construction is actually going to be in three phases. The first phase we're calling deconstruction rather than demolition. And what they have to do on the building really was built as two pieces. The first three stories is a rock-solid concrete box that's really strong and wasn't severely damaged. The top two floors is more like spaghetti. It was kind of tacked on. It's not very structurally sound, and that's where almost all the damage happened. That top part is going to have to be basically taken apart brick by brick, rebuilt, and then all the historic materials reapplied to it. So that's mainly what the deconstruction is going to involve, is how we stage and take the top of that building off and then protect it as we do the construction. Then the construction part will be in two phases. FEMA only pays for what was damaged by the earthquake. Basically, they'll pay to bring the building back to the way it was the day of the earthquake. So that's one set of construction documents, and you have to do that construction and do that separately and final it and have FEMA come and sign off on it before you can then spend other monies, which will be city monies, on turning the building into something that actually works better for us. So there'll be two phases of construction. So right now we do have the plans in. We're starting the plan check process. We believe that deconstruction right now is scheduled for next year sometime. We don't know the exact date, but 2010, we believe we start deconstruction. Then when deconstruction's over, then we'll start with the reconstruction phase. By the time we get to reconstruction, we believe we'll have all our FEMA financing reimbursement issues settled by then.
And the FEMA appeal, nothing yet?
I don't have any news on that. I know it's back in there, and I don't know if no news is good news or not in this case, but I know that's where it's at.
Chairperson, John?
Commissioner Schmidt?
That sounds really exciting. And, you know, something kind of blipped in my head while you were doing it. I mean, the building of a Chipola, with the top of that building, is a very unusual thing to see. And I'm wondering if there's a way in which the city could kind of sell that and maybe find interested construction groups or parties or people to come to the city to watch that Chipola get built, because that'll be really interesting and really exciting to see. And I wonder if we could spin it some way to get people to come here and watch an unusual feat. I mean, it'd be like the we're at the Duomo in Florence or something, right?
It's all about marketing. Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Ward?
Yes. You won't have heartburn. This is all positive stuff, at least the first part. I was at a historical society meeting the other night with my wife, and I noticed that the all the underbrush and growth that had been accumulating for years on that side of the creek had been all cleared out. I know there was a CCC crew in there for weeks. And, boy, I invite anybody to go back there. It just opened the whole area, and it's just wonderful. I talked to people there, and I said, when are you going to do the other side of the creek? They said, well, we got to get more money. We're going to do it next year. So it was a project well-conceived and well-executed. Now, having said that there's one little tiny project that has been ill-conceived and not well executed. About 2 months ago, I sent an email with a digital photograph to every member of the city council pointing out a section of this town about 100 feet off of El Camino, right opposite Miner's Hardware, where a development is all fenced out, a bunch of houses are just falling apart. And part of it has been used as a dump. There's old toilets, there's old couches, you name it. Everybody that goes by there sees it. It's been there for a couple of years, and I complain. Two months, nothing has been done. And now I see more stuff is being dumped there. I don't know what the timeline is on this stuff, but since we're on television, I thought maybe I could embarrass somebody into getting on the stick
Ward.
And doing something. It doesn't appear to be something that's going to take a lot of effort.
Commissioner Ward, please, that should have come up under Commissioner comments, which was before the director's report, and we finished the director's report. So at that point,
okay.
I'd like to adjourn the meeting.
Okay.